Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Today, our guest is David Crowley, director of the upcoming amazing movie, Gray State. How are you doing today, David?
Oh, I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Are you out in a park somewhere?
Yeah, I'm taking a walk. It's gorgeous. I'm trying to enjoy the weather while I still can.
You're in Texas, right?
I'm actually in Minnesota.
Ah, I thought you were in your phone number is Texas, isn't it? I don't know.
Anyway. It sure is. Yeah, I was stationed down there in Fort Hood for a year or two.
Oh, you're military?
Yes, I'm a veteran.
Ah, you know, my son's in the Army. I was wondering why, how you got such properly, what's the word? Like, the people holding guns in your film do not look like mall ninjas. They look like citizens who've had some kind of severely good training. Are a lot of them military?
Severely good training. I'm going to have to use that one. Actually, we have a good mix. Mitch, my partner, and I, we're both veterans. We run the Bullet Exchange, which is a military prop rental company, and we also do actor training. So anyone who ended up in our film who had to wield a weapon got a crash course, at least, in weapons training. Denny Mason, our lead actor, he actually had like 2 years of weapons training through us. But anything that we do, we try to do accurately. So I'm glad that you picked up on that.
Good. You know, one thing I hate a lot about Hollywood movies that is correct in your movie is, in the trailer that I've seen, at least the extended trailer, is the guns act like guns. You know, in Hollywood movies, whenever someone like moves a gun or points a gun, you know, they'll be pointing an AR-15, and when they move it, you'll hear like a cocking sound, and it's a cocking sound from a revolver. It's like, what the hell is that? You know? And a lot of
I do plenty of that, dicing up sound effects, but only when I need to. You know, pointing a rifle obviously doesn't make it sound off.
So, I know.
Yeah, we avoid that kind of stuff.
Yep. And are you just the director, or are you what else did you do on this? What hats did you wear on this project?
I wear many hats. I'm the writer, director, producer, editor, graphic artist, marketing guy, composer. Anything that can be done, I did for this project. And, of course, I'm aided by a core group of guys. Mitch Hiles is my co-producer and director of photography, and Danny Mason, who helped me develop a lot of the story concepts, and he's also the lead actor.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, it seems like you have a really amazing crew assembled for this. The actors are really good, too. You asked me if I wanted to interview the actors with you, and I'm like, no, I want to interview the director, man, because, you know, I'm a director, and I hate to say it, but no matter how good actors are, I kind of look at them like talking props, but that's, we don't tell them that. I don't tell them that.
I won't tell them either.
Okay. I mean, it's a lot more than that. Put it this way. A great film is often made by the actor in a certain way, but often any other actor would have been just as good who's a good actor. Really, I mean, I subscribe to the French idea that like the director is the auteur. The director is all, and who the person who makes it, but that could be ego. So,
well, no, I think there's a lot to that because actors, I used to have the same kind of ideas. Like actors are just utilitarian. They're going to do exactly what the director tells them. But I shot with a couple feature films over the past couple years, and I've seen some incredible acting that like made the entire set go to a standstill. And there are those moments in which the actor really makes it happen. But on a technical basis, I would say the director is responsible for every artistic vision that the film creates.
Including,
so the director has to have his,
including choosing the actors. Yeah. You know, and a lot of times, sometimes it's based on availability. But, you know, if you just look at some of the great movies and see, like, who was originally considered for the part, you're like, yeah, he would have worked in that, too. And, you know, there is something true about that thing of, like, great actors, you know, of they just reach through the lens and grab the person. There's something magical about it. You know, I was telling you before this, I did a movie that was narrated by Robert Downey Jr. He's not on camera in it, but it took an hour for him to narrate the movie. I mean, it was, and I was in the studio sort of directing, but he didn't really need much direction. He's Robert Downey Jr., but it was like, it was the most professional person I've ever been in a room with. And that guy has it. You know, there's a lot of actors that are serviceable, but they don't have it. And he's one of those ones that has it. And there's a lot of people who are not famous who have it too. And hopefully they'll get more exposure from projects like yours.
Oh, absolutely. Charles Hubble, the lead actor of my film. Yeah.
He's good, man. He's got it.
Guy.
He's got it. I could tell. I could tell.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's the one who I reference when he brings the set to a standstill. He did it on my film. I was honored to give him that opportunity, actually, because being in the same room with this guy is intimidating because he's just really, really good.
Yep. You know, I have one critique for you, and you can take it or leave it. In all of the interviews that you've done a lot of like talking about how it's you're in Minneapolis, right?
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about how it's a Minneapolis production and it's a great production of Minneapolis people. And it's like, while I understand the thing of wanting to like trumpet your hometown and you've got a great scene there that nobody recognizes yet, I think it limits it because I don't think it's a Minneapolis film. I think it's going to be an international film, and I think you shouldn't talk about it like it's a local band playing at the garage, you know?
No, that's great criticism, but the thing is, when I was crafting like the marketing package, I wasn't sure which pond would bite, you know? So yeah. I've got a lot of contacts locally who would fund the film if they knew it was going to be a local production. So I want to kind of pitch it both ways, but whoever bites first will get the apple.
Well, you know, man, we
are mobile.
You just have two press packages then.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. This is my first one, my first major feature film push, so I'm definitely learning.
Yeah, I mean, Prince was from Minneapolis, but who knows that? They just know Prince, you know?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm definitely not tethered to Minneapolis by any means, but if I get more funding that way, you know, I'll play that game.
Yeah. So what have you spent so far making this trailer?
That's impossible to decide, Billy. We spent $6,000 in cash, my partner and I. That's just out of pocket through our production company. And that's just, you know, money spent harnessing the actors to our set and getting the props that we needed. But we spent another year in post doing 17-hour days. So, I mean, how do you put a price tag on that?
Right. Well, I don't. I mean, I do if it ever sells and makes, a lot of money, then you bill hourly for that. But it's a labor of love and out of pocket right now. Are you using credit cards at all? Are you going into debt on this?
Nope. It's all paid for.
Excellent.
So far.
Excellent. And that seems like a really smart... I would be really surprised if you said yes, based on a lot of the plot of the movie seems to be about, like, you know...
Oh, no, we paid cash. We paid cash for everything.
I would expect you pay gold and ammo, not even cash, but, you know, not everybody takes gold and ammo. Are you a gun guy?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Do you have a gun on you right now?
Not right now. I'm going casual today.
Really? I call that going naked, man. That's not casual.
You know, you're absolutely right. I just didn't think to grab it on my way out.
Yeah, it's...
I usually carry.
Good. You know, Ted Nugent, I don't like him because he's really, really statist, but he said a couple things that are really funny. One is, the right to bear arms means I've got some on me right now. And he didn't even say got one on me. He said got some on me right now. And that's kind of how I feel about it, but...
That's awesome.
So, for
people, I know guys like that.
I'm going to embed the trailer for this movie. I really want people listening to go to Anarchy Gumbo Podcast at Kitty Feet, KITTY, F as in Frank, EET.com, and look at the trailer for this. It's stunning. I've described it to people when they ask me what it's about. I say, well, it's kind of like Red Dawn if instead of the enemy being the Soviets, it was FEMA, you know? And a lot of people have been waiting for the remake of Red Dawn, which allegedly is done, but then they have postponed it because they had to change the soldiers from Chinese to North Korean because some of the funding was Chinese or something like that. So that may
too close to reality that way.
Yeah.
You gotta have it like Jordan Tades, the musician in the Liberty Movement, he described this to me. Like, people are comfortable with the post-apocalyptic doomsday scenario as long as it's so many steps removed from reality. For example, Mad Max or something.
Yeah.
Because then it's fantasy. Then I don't have to pay attention. But Gray State doesn't pull their punches like that. It's right here, right now. And it's not even Red Dawn meets FEMA. It's
1984.
I don't know. It's
1984.
It's more like a zombie movie. Like, everyone's already here. It's not like the planes are flying over and FEMA's jumping out of them.
Right. Except
they're already here.
Right. Right. And I noticed that, too. It was like, it wasn't, things being brought in. It was things that are already in your neighborhood. You know, like fusion centers and militarized police. And, you know, I mean, you talk about zombies. Zombies are really big right now. There's a lot of zombie movies, and a lot of people who are into prepping and into gun training like to talk about zombie hunting exercises and their zombie targets. And I really don't like that, actually. I think it's almost a political correctness of, like, No, the people that you're training to shoot are going to be people, humans, trying to kill you. They're not going to be zombies. They're going to be humans, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think once you can remove humanity by degree, you know, zombies, you don't think of them as your neighbors. They're just slobbering fiends who want to feast on you, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun blowing their heads off. And once you can kind of instill that training, then you can dehumanize your target. It's not going to be that way.
No. No, it's going to be, you know, I don't know if it'll be my neighbors, because my neighbors are mostly Mormon preppers, so they're probably not going to come over and try to take my food stores. But when I lived in California, you know, a lot of my neighbors, I mean, if the power went out for 3 days, people started looting, you know, let alone anything described in your movie.
Oh, 72 hours to steal for something, a week to kill for it, and that's the timeline we're on. The places like Las Vegas, they are 4 days away from extinction at any given moment.
Why Las Vegas in particular?
It's isolated in the desert. How much of a food supply and water supply does it have? Where's its water coming from?
Yeah.
The second the pipes stop flowing, the electricity goes off, those people are doomed.
Whereas here in Wyoming, I think people could survive for a good number of months hunting. I mean, there's, you know, hell, I could hunt bunnies in my yard without waste ammo. I could just go out with a blanket and throw it over a bunch of pigeons, you know? And there's antelope all over town.
Everyone else knows that, too, and you'll be fighting them off the property.
That's true. I mean, deer hunting season here is like a holiday. I mean, literally, like, people who own businesses don't expect anyone to come into work on the first day of deer hunting season here.
Oh, Minnesota's huge on hunting, too. I don't necessarily do it myself, but, you know, I respect someone's right to hunt. I'm not one of those guys who think, like, having the name Hunter is bad.
Yeah, that was a recent one. That was horrible and ironic. So what made you want to make this movie?
Oh, my. Well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm always looking for the next new project. Speaking of zombies, I've done a few zombie shorts, but, you know, those are student projects. Not something I'm going to throw around in front of me.
Where'd you go to school? Did you go to film school?
After the military, I did go to Minnesota School of Business. They have a digital video program, which I'm not entirely pleased to admit that I attend. It's not that strenuous, but it's an opportunity for me to do what I want to do, which is make films, real films.
Yeah.
And I guess Danny Mason kind of introduced me to a lot of these ideas like FEMA and martial law and stuff. And I'm like, at first I'm like, oh, cool, this is a good premise for a film. And, you know, the more you get into it, it's like, oh, shit, this is real. I gotta care about this. And then you have that period of several months where you don't want to go outside. I went through that. But it's been my prerogative as a filmmaker to craft a narrative out of this, you know, filter through all the mess, kind of develop a scenario, and then decide how to tell a story through it. And that's kind of what I've been all about for the last 2 years or so.
Will Gray State have a happy ending?
What do you think? You tell me. That's the question I want to hear.
Do you know? Do you know the answer to that yet?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do. Okay. I want to hear what you have to say.
I mean, I would guess and hope that it probably has a triumphant ending, but it's the hero standing on a pile of bodies. Some of them people he knew.
That's pretty close. That's pretty astute. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I mean, I'm really, I don't know. We watch TV and my wife and I watch TV and we watch shows that are really twisted and not like normal TV and break all the conventions of plot, like Breaking Bad. And like twice an episode in a new episode when it's airing, I'll recite the line of a character right before they say it. I don't know. It's like ESP, man. Something.
Because everything's scripted. It follows a formula. Gray State does no such thing. There will be a pile of bodies. You won't know who's going to end up in that pile while you're watching it. A film has to follow convention. It has to follow that storytelling formula. Otherwise, the story doesn't work. You and I know that as filmmakers. But once you know the rules, you can break the rules. And Gray State breaks rules. And that it's not only immediately physical, it's interdimensional, it's very layered, it's spiritual at times, without, you know, adhering to any sort of, you know, Western philosophy or anything. But it's deep. It's taken me a long time to craft this story, and while it might not be a physically surface-level happy ending, anyone who's paying attention will extract some real values from the ending. I hope, if I can pull it off.
Are you a Christian?
I am, but I don't know where to draw the line between what I've been taught my whole life and what is probably more closer to the truth, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of spiritual exploration, but I tend to end at the same answers, though.
Are you familiar with a writer named Boston Tea Party?
No, it sounds familiar, but you'd have to elaborate.
He's a gun writer, survivalist writer, libertarian, Christian guy in Wyoming. He's written a bunch of how-to books on survival and guns and dealing with the police. And he's also written a novel called Mulan Labe, which is a pretty stunning first novel. And it's basically the state of Wyoming secedes and hilarity ensues. No, Wyoming becomes a libertarian paradise, but it ain't pretty. And there is a pile of bodies, maybe, or, you know, the scent of one anyway. I would look at it for a possible second movie. I mean, it seems like it'd be right up your alley. And a lot of people said for a long time it should be made into a movie. And if you read it and you're interested, I'll give you an introduction to the guy.
Oh, sure. That reminds me of James Wesley Rawls' novel, Patriots. Have you read that?
No, but it would be on the same bookshelf with this book for sure.
Oh, absolutely. It would. Yeah.
Yep. So how are you funding this and how can people help?
Okay, that's a good question. So far, Gray State represents what my partner and I can do out of pocket. Now, that's calling in the favors, of course, but once we get a budget harnessed to our project, you know, we don't need favors anymore. We can get the big stuff. So basically, Gray State is something we cheated out of nothing, you know? So if you give us money, that should just be more encouragement to see where we can go with it. So Gray State's essentially a marketing tool at this point. We're going to show people the trailer, investors, studios, anyone with money, and see if we can get a budget. And a big part of that effort has been crowdfunding. So if you go to Indiegogo.com/Gray State Movie, that's our crowdfunding effort. And you're not investing, you're just buying stuff. Like, I want to give $50 to this project. Well, you're not just giving $50, you're getting a t-shirt, you're getting a poster, you're getting some high-resolution desktop wallpapers, you're getting some signed 8x10s. We've got a lot of great stuff we're giving out, and that's all on Indiegogo.com/Gray State Movie, and that's our first effort. We're seeking $50,000, and that's just to get us off the ground. That's not what the film's budget's going to be.
You know,
we have to hire legal and all that stuff.
You know, Indiegogo recently kind of screwed over someone who's kind of I wouldn't say patriot movement, but, you know, someone of a similar mindset who'd be on the same shelf as you and I. I did an interview with this guy who is coming up with a printable gun. It's basically the idea that using a 3D printer, you could freely distribute over the internet CAD files for a gun and print a gun, which would get around gun laws or prohibitions or, you know, anything like that. And Indiegogo, he raised about $2,000 on there, and Indiegogo figured out what he was doing and canceled his membership. They refunded the money back to everyone who donated it, but I'd be careful about putting all my eggs in that one basket for sure, because they have a history of that.
Oh, yeah, PayPal does that too. If you make a notation that the funding is for anything other than innocuous, then, yeah, they're going to cancel your payments.
PayPal, I never leave more than $200 in PayPal without cashing it out. And PayPal also has a thing that they don't really have in their terms of service, which is, if you use their button that says donate, they will close your account if they figure out that you are not a 501c3 nonprofit. The donate button is only open to the nonprofit. What we do with our podcast is we have subscriptions through PayPal and explain that the subscriptions, you know, you don't get anything else other than our good graces by subscribing, but it's a monthly, you know, you can pay $5 a month or $10 a month until you cancel. And we make it clear that it's not tax deductible too.
Oh, you clever girl.
Clever girl.
Yeah.
I ain't no girl.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
So, moving on from funding to distribution, if you cannot get any kind of mainstream distribution for this, is it something that you would give away, or would you keep it locked in a closet somewhere?
Well, you and I both know if a studio bought this project, that it would just get put on a shelf, or be drastically changed from its original message.
Yeah.
So in the interest of maintaining creative control, I will not sell the project. However, if it goes nowhere, and someone's offering me $200 million or something awesome like that, you know, who knows? I got to feed the monkey, you know. But as it stands right now, I want to get this film funded, and I will get it made for whatever budget I can get. If that means $500,000, great. If that means $25 million like it needs, then that's great too.
Okay,
but this movie will get made, even if it's a long term haul.
When you get it made, I'm hoping you can get distribution for it without getting it chopped to pieces. If you can't, come talk to me, because I'll turn you on to my distributor, who put out 5 of my DVDs so far and didn't cost me anything, didn't give me an advance, and they sell them and they give monthly royalties, and I make part of my living at it. So that's an option too.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've gotten offers from people in Germany and stuff already. I've got a lot of these offers kind of in a holding pattern, as it were, right now. But once we can figure out our legal structure and actually have these conversations, I can have people broker these deals for me. Yeah, we're gonna get distribution. I'm not worried about that. Part of the Grey State effort has been establishing the audience before we even make the film.
Yeah.
And that's something I think that we can demonstrate. And I think an investor is more interested in money than a message.
Yep, and you've definitely done that. You got a lot of views on YouTube of this thing. How many views right now?
We're at about 193,000 as of today, and once we do Alex Jones on Friday, who knows?
Okay. Well, this isn't coming out for 2 weeks, so everyone should know I interviewed you before Alex Jones, even though it came out after.
Yeah, that's what Gary Franchi said, too. Like, I want you before Alex.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk a little about the technical aspect of it. What camera did you shoot it on? I thought it was a Red camera, which you said, I wish, if anyone knows what a Red camera is. But it looks as good as stuff I've seen shot on a Red. What did you use?
We used the 5D Mark II, which is sort of like the, it's not exactly prosumer, but it's not exactly cinema either. It's a decent compromise if you know its ins and outs. My partner Mitch knows everything about this camera, and he was able to get the, what's it called? It's a very flat cinema-style color profile, so it's almost gray when you're looking at it. But what you can do is you can pull a lot of latitude and post out of it. So very specific color grading will make it look really, really nice, like a Red camera, for example.
Cool. And that's 1080p resolution, right? 30 frames a second?
Or did you shoot 24? You're seeing is actually a 720 output, but yeah, it does shoot 1080.
Does it shoot 24 frames a second, or is it 30?
Yeah, 24.
Yeah, because I thought you used the 24 setting, because it looked very filmic to me. What did you do? You're doing the editing. Are you doing the color correction in the post and things like that, too?
Yeah, I basically did all the posts, except for Mitch and I have a workflow. He does whatever I can't at the moment, and often he'll stack things a certain way. Like, I can give you the walkthrough of a basic,
yeah.
a special effects shot that we have planned. For example, let's go with the UN shot when, like, the British soldiers are downloading the boxes. So I storyboard that shot. I figure out the elements that we need. We purchased 3D models for Maya, and we don't know how to use Maya because we're still in school and we haven't learned yet, but we anticipate learning how to use Maya. Anyway, we storyboard the shot and we figure out the different elements that we need, and then we get studio space. So we're shooting from a 13 or 15-foot ladder in a studio, and we array the actors in a certain way, and then we duplicate them. We shoot them in chunks so we can duplicate them in post. We buy 3 boxes. Mitch spray paints UN on the side. We duplicate those in post. We mark off where the trucks are going to be. And then, well, for example, the British guys. We didn't have a whole lot of British uniforms, so it's just basically Mitch and I are those British guys. I'm 3 of them, and then Mitch is the guy downloading the boxes. So we have to plan out and shoot all those different elements separately. And then we have some of the actors be like the National Guard officer was Bob Cummings. And some of our other actors we just dressed up and made them the guys standing in line. Duplicated them. We shot different elements that go in the background, like the guy walking the fence open. And then we have our animator, actually Mark Casper, who's a local animator. He helped us with that shot before we actually learned Maya. So they're driving over a little bump in the road before the trucks actually can come through the gate. And then they come on in. There's actually helicopters involved that shot and rooftop snipers. And then all of that is put onto a matte painting. And that's an actual Walmart. That it's a defunct Walmart in my hometown, actually. I went down there. I got up on a ladder, duplicated the angle, and I shot that picture, and then I did the matte painting on it. And then, of course, we shot video of sky, so we could put the sky in, and the matte painting includes the skyline of Minneapolis in the background, and then it's all color graded. But then you have to start thinking about shadows and reflections. It happened to be raining that day when I took the picture, so I had to create a reflection net based off of where the water was. And so all those layers, like the guys walking over the parking lot, have to be duplicated and inversed, and then different blend modes applied. This is a very complicated shot for something you see for about 3 seconds. But the way we do that is I would plan out the shot. I'd pick the shots of the guys that timed out the best so we could interact with each other, plan out the shot for about 8 seconds, and then I would let Mitch clean up my mats. And that's just a process of extracting the background from the foreground and really making it precise. A lot of that is rotoscoping. Anyone listening to this knows what rotoscoping is. It's flinching right now because we saw how small those components were. It's just a monstrous process, and that's just one shot. One shot out of several, probably 30, let me think. I had over 70 special effects shots.
How many? How many layers are in that shot?
Oh, there's no way to compute. It's got, the master comp has something like 80 or 90, and all of those are subcomps. And I'm in After Effects speech right now. Subcomps, wow. Each have like another 80 layers. It's really hard to say.
Wow.
A lot of color coding goes into that. But that's just one shot, and we have a hell of a lot more, actually. And a lot of them didn't even make it in the trailer. So when trailer 2 comes out, you'll see a lot more. There's a couple different. I mean, that was a locked-off shot. We've done 3D moving camera shots that we had to go, like, to the University of Minnesota doing location scouting in February of 2011. I'm like, this spot would work. And so we take pictures in 360 degrees, stitch them together in post, animate a 3D camera in Z-Space in After Effects, and have our layers at different points on the map. And it's just like a big simulated 3D environment. And we just plug our people into that. And what happens in that shot is our lead actor, Danny Mason, is engaging soldiers, UN soldiers, down an alleyway. He's dodging, he's firing, and then a Humvee spins around the corner with the minigun in the turret that starts lighting up the road. He dodges out of the way. He looks across the way at some of his buddies who are opening up with shotguns before they get lit up by a helicopter that then zooms through the street, lighting up civilians before dipping through clouds and taking off. And that shot didn't make it in the trailer. That took probably 8 or 9 months to do.
You used the word, I want to clarify something. You used the word in passing. You said downloading boxes. Is that a term for taking boxes off a truck, or does it mean something else?
Oh, yeah, downloading boxes. That's military speak, I guess.
Okay.
That's just taking boxes off the truck.
I was thinking something with computing. What computers are you using for this?
I have an iMac. Mitch used we have access to a school that has a lot of better computers. Mitch knows the specs on them a lot better than I do, but he just upgraded to a PC since Apple decided to crap out on Final Cut X, and it looks like that whole program is dead in the water, so we're all moving to CS6 on PC.
That's what I use. Yeah, it's funny you said upgrading to a PC. A lot of people would argue with that, but I really think that at this point, PC and Mac are so close from copying each other that Macs just have prettier cases and cost more.
Well, now they're moving to the iOS software, which is basically an iPad. And who wants that?
I know.
And they're ditching their whole Pro line, so all their like Final Cut and Color and Motion, those things are all dead in the water.
I know.
So CS6 is definitely moving in to fill that void.
Windows is doing the same thing, too. I mean, I feel like going out and buying 4 Windows 7 computers and caching them in PVC tubes or something.
That's a lot of technical talk that Mitch understands a lot better than I do. But
well, Windows 7, I think, is like Windows has reached its pinnacle and it's perfect, finally, or as good as Windows could be. And they're moving to Windows 8 now, which is intended for pads only. I mean, it'll run on a PC, but it's like a whole different interface, and it's made for content consumers rather than content creators. And
yeah,
when I say caching and PVC tubing, I'm joking about how people, you know, bury guns in gold. And
wait,
saying,
who doesn't bury their guns in gold?
Who buries their guns in gold? People who fear.
Who doesn't?
Oh, okay.
Who doesn't these days?
I was like, really? You're asking me that? And you made this movie? Oh, I didn't hear the who doesn't. Yeah, you know, I was joking about doing that with computers running Windows 7.
Gotta stash that shit.
So, do you have a day job? Are you in school, or what do you do?
Well, I am in school still. I graduate at the end of the month. I get my bachelor's. Woohoo! Who gives a shit? I'm going to move into my production company full-time, also running the Bolt Exchange, my military prop rental company. So Mitch is my partner in all these endeavors, and hopefully we can make enough money to actually survive. I don't know. If Gray State takes off and starts to pay the bills, that'll be sweet. Otherwise, I'd have to take a back burner while we make a living. I'm a videographer, photographer. I can do website design. I'm a composer. I'm not that good, but, you know, I'm learning.
With your prop rental company, do you also offer, lessons for whoever's going to be pretending to hold a gun in a film?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got what's called BEAT, the Bold Exchange Actor Training Program, and we train a lot of the guys, actually. The bad guy, the only bad guy with a face that you see, he's one of our actors, we train him. We train Danny Mason. We've got another crew of guys that we routinely go to, a lot of our door kickers. We train pretty frequently with these guys and put different kinds of weapons in their hands, and we do everything from police to SWAT to grunt-level infantry to special forces-type training, and they definitely get the runaround.
Yeah, I like that in your trailer, nobody has their finger on the trigger until they're ready to shoot. And that's another complaint I have about Hollywood. Hollywood's gotten a little better about that, but, even still now somewhat, and a lot 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago, you know, cops running around with their finger on the trigger looking for somebody. It's like, no, man, that doesn't happen, or it shouldn't.
I think Hollywood's doing a great job. A lot of those guys are more professional than actual soldiers, in my experience. Tom Cruise is awesome. Not that I like the guy, but, you know, he knows his shit for weapons.
Yep. So, what do you think can be done to prevent Gray State from becoming a documentary rather than a drama?
Oh, man. This is getting into the political stuff that I try not to get into. But, okay, well, the whole thing that happened with the RNC, I'm sure you're familiar with it.
You went there. You were down there, huh? You were in Tampa, right?
Oh, yeah. We were there. That was part of our promotion effort. We were there. But what you saw was, it wasn't even the, I went there hoping to see some skull cracking, like a police state, to kind of vindicate my efforts, you know, like, hey, yeah, this is really happening. Well, the cops there were kind and professional, very, very friendly, and the protesters were a bunch of belligerent kids, and so that didn't pan out so well. But what the RNC itself did was reveal what a sham politics are.
Yeah.
So we saw how scripted it was, and how the Ron Paul people were being shut out, and how Romney was going to win no matter what, and now it's out in the open. I don't know if people are paying attention yet.
Well, I did an interview about 4 months ago on the same podcast with a guy from Wyoming who is a GOP delegate, national delegate, and a Ron Paul fan, but he didn't just join the GOP and become a delegate for Ron Paul like a lot of people did. Like, this guy's been in the party for like 15 years or something, and he told me horror stories. I mean, basically, they did things to keep the Ron Paul vote out locally that involved like Dick Cheney being in the room coordinating it, that, you know, were somewhere between violation of GOP bylaws and, you know, felonious fraud, somewhere in the middle there.
Well, I think the second that you realize you have no part in the democratic process, if you can still call it that, and you have no say in the way you're governed, it's a very scary thing. So as I was watching the results of the state votes for the nominee, all I could do was go on the Gray State Facebook page and type, if you want to see the opening scenes of Gray State, they're on C-SPAN right now.
Do you vote?
And just looking at the faces of these people cheering for Romney, like that's the Gray State right there. So you ask, like, how do we prevent that? Well, you have to wake up. Romney's funded by the same people as Obama. You're just playing into this Hegelian dialectic left-right paradigm, and it's all bullshit. And you have to, like, wake up to these things. And learn about freedom, you know, learn about where we come from as a species, as a people, and apply this to your own lives on a communal, like a community basis, and come back to, like, hey, get to know your neighbors, you know? Why don't you barter for some things instead of just participating in the consumerist lifestyle? And it comes down to that, a personal change. And I think that's how you can prevent a real Gray State, because once you do that, you know your values and you know when they're being attacked. I think we're an anti-culture. I think that we are totally devoid of any morals. And so it's very easy for a new world order, so to speak, to roll in over us. And if you want to prevent a Gray State, you got to learn who you are. And no one really knows. No one knows that.
Well said, man. I think that a lot of it has to do with not only getting to know yourself, but educating others, which you're obviously committed to doing. And you mentioned stuff, you know, consumerism. I have a lot of stuff, but all the valuable stuff that I have is basically art supplies, you know, equipment for audio or video production, to the point where, you know, I'll spend 20 grand. I have 20 grand worth of stuff, and I buy new clothes about once a year, and I buy them at Walmart because I'd rather spend the money on a new Riven mic or something.
Oh, I'm the same way. I mean, I'll invest in a pair of, like, Merrells, some good walking shoes, even when I can't really afford them, because I value good walking shoes more than some imaginary digits in a bank.
Well, good walking shoes can get you out of a place in a way when the bank is closed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you got any, we're not running out of time here, but that kind of felt like a good ending spot, but I don't want to chase you out too quick. You got any closing comments of any length, short or long?
Yeah, I think so. When I was doing the Gray State project, when I was figuring out like the visuals that I want, I mean, this is all 2 years old. This is when I got into it. I'm like, wait, RFID, that, you know, that's messed up. Martial law. Wow. How do I show that? And then for 2 years, I've been working on finishing those visuals, and the trailer came out August 7th of this year. The Gray State project has evolved since then. It's gotten deeper. It's gotten very much darker. And so people, when they see this, their responses, you know, as I knew they would be, they're very divided. First of all, they're very supportive. Like, wow, this is like a future scenario that we can face, that we are facing right now unless we wake up. And then what they want to do is assign their responsibility for activism to my project and assume that that's what I want to do, is wake people up with Gray State. When in fact, I can't make any such moral distinctions because I'm a filmmaker. I'm an artist. What I'm going to do is explore human truths, and I can do so through a pretty messed up context like the Gray State world. But how real or not real it is completely irrelevant. Like, what I'm saying is, people kind of expect me to tell their story, their version of truth with Gray State, and that's not my intent. If it resonates as truth with you, that is great. If it doesn't, that's also great. But what I've been seeing is that the 3% or so who really hate Gray State, they don't hate it because it was shot poorly, or that story could never work, and here's why. They hate it because it threatens them. It threatens their reality. And that just tells me that what I'm doing is close to the truth, at least, because they're that threatened by it. I think that the reality that most people live in is almost like a religion. Like, if you challenge a Christian or a Muslim who just grew up believing what they believe, they don't know how to defend it logically. What they're going to do is they're going to lash out in a very knee-jerk negative response to defend their reality. And that's just the nature of humanity, I think. So what I'm seeing in the reactions to Gray State is either very positive or very negative. It's a very polarized argument.
I can definitely imagine some of the positive reactions. I mean, I've had them myself, and my friends have had them, and I've seen response videos even on YouTube with very positive reactions. Talk about some of the negative reactions, and in particular, have you been contacted by any government agencies or spoken to about this?
If I were contacted by a government agency, I would not know about it, so I can't really answer that question. I'm sure that I have been. A lot of the reactions I'm getting about the trailer, they want to peg me as some kind of Zionist Jew, I guess, because my name is David. I guess that's proof enough for them. My lead actor's name is Danny Mason. Oh, you mean like Freemasons? You know, so they want to develop their own conspiracy theories and
who's
stuff.
That?
They want to say that the whole film is COINTELPRO. I'm just trying to develop lists to put them on.
You've actually been accused of those things?
Oh, yeah, and much worse. And they want to say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I'm a closet Marxist, and they can prove it. And all I have to do is say no, because I'm on the freaking internet, and then they can't challenge me.
I was actually recently accused of being a COINTELPRO agent by a guy named Mark Stevens, who does a show called Adventures in Legal Land on the same network that I'm on. And I say you're nobody until somebody accuses you of being a COINTELPRO agent. I mean, Alex Jones gets accused of it all the time.
It's a litmus test of how close you are in your work to striking a nerve, I think.
Yeah.
So a lot of people say that Gray State is just fear porn, and they're not going to support it, and it's fear-mongering and stuff like that. Just because Gray State is scary doesn't make it fear porn.
Yeah, although I could imagine Alex Jones spending some quality time alone with himself watching the movie.
Oh, absolutely. There are those people out there, and that is within their right to do so, whatever gets them off, I guess. But that doesn't mean that I'm involved.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what other negative reactions have you had from people through the internet or in person? What do people say, other than that you're Zionist, COINTELPRO, Marxist, what was the other thing? I don't even remember, man.
Oh my, there's a bunch of them. I'm sure they think I'm a reptilian or something. there's been a lot of those very silly arguments, and I kind of stopped paying attention to the YouTube comments after a while. So I can't really answer, but I do know that I've already made a lot of enemies, and this was a long time ago, actually. I made enemies just by releasing little bits and talking to people about my idea for this film long before it was even released as a trailer, and I've made no-shit enemies just because they don't want to hear it. And a lot of them have been family, not my family, but I'm talking about other actors who've spoken to their family about it. And people just don't want to hear it. And what they do is they assign, like, well, that can't be real, so it's going to be a terrible movie, so I don't want to hear anything about it. But I wonder if they thought the same thing about Toy Story. Like, hey, toys don't talk. This movie sucks.
Yeah.
So the negative reaction so far has largely been not reputable. So it's just been a lot of, you know, silly banter about, you know, I'm a Zionist pig and don't support my film.
Huh. Wow. Do you have, like, did you get city permits to do it or just shoot it guerrilla style?
we wanted to do it for real, but a lot of it was guerrilla, unfortunately. A lot of the scenes we did, it was like they had the real scale of a real production. So a lot of them, yes, we went to the city, we got permits, we hired cops to babysit us for a few hours, and we did it for real. But a lot of the stuff was just guerrilla, just because we couldn't get a hold of the city liaison who does that stuff, or they didn't know what to do. And
yeah,
it was only a 3-second shot anyway. So yeah, there's a couple things like that, but for by and large, it was a real production.
So Minneapolis doesn't have a film commissioner.
Minneapolis is a bitch to deal with. They want to charge you like $150 an hour, even if you're just freelance photographer. So like the initial park scene we shot guerrilla style just real quick, but the St. Paul people, I mean Twin Cities is Minneapolis and St. Paul, those guys are a delight to deal with. They'll give you a cop, they'll make all the communications for you, and they'll set it up for you, and all you gotta do is send them a check at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean I struggle going back and forth with doing that. I mean, one thing is when you go to sell the film, if it's a real distributor, they're going to want to see proof of that kind of stuff, because otherwise they'll get a bill for it. The other thing is, people charging that kind of, like, making it too hard to do and wanting to, you know, charge the wedding photographer taking pictures in the park, that kind of kills commerce, too. It kills anyone wanting to film there. They'll go one state over or something.
Or they'll just do it, not tell anyone. Kind of exemplary of the system, which creates its own criminals, I think. They just make a bunch of laws that no one follows.
Absolutely. So how can people find your film, and how can they help with funding? What are the websites?
GrayStateMovie.com is our website, but if you Google Graystate, you'll get 40 pages of hits. It's really getting out there, and they all kind of funnel back to the same source. GrayStateMovie.com. YouTube.com/GrayStateMovie. Basically, if you Google Graystate Movie, you'll get all of them. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on the web, we've got Indiegogo going on.
It's Graystate with an A, G-R-A-Y, the American spelling.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Yeah, people read that and they want to spell it with an E, but it is an A. If you want to get the right YouTube search result, spell it with an A.
Yep. Well, cool, man. David Crowley, it's been really great having you on here, and I think people should go out and see the trailer to Graystate and help you out with funding, and I wish you the best of luck, man.
Hey, thanks, and this is a lot of fun, actually. I'd like to be on again.
Let's have you on again in like 6 or 8 months. I'd love to do that.
Rocking. Yeah, you know my email address.
Cool, man. Worms.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. We have Freedom Fiends, Anarchy Gumbo, and 2 designs for Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $6 for 4 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.